Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
We need a requirement to consult with the public in a meaningful way. For any significant decision. There was no consultation on Bill C-51 before it was introduced. We need an honesty in politics law. The conservatives simply lied and lied and lied again about what was in Bill C-51 and the effects of it.
That's the voice of Duff Conacher from Democracy Watch. On this week's show, we speak to Duff about the upcoming federal election and what progressive moves Canadians can demand to make our government more transparent and accountable. So stay tuned. Online, I have Duff Conacher. Duff Conacher is an organizer, educator, and former coordinator for Democracy Watch. Welcome to the show, Duff.
Thank you very much.
Prime Minister Harper has just dropped a writ, and we are going to be faced with the second longest electoral campaign in Canadian history. And the mainstream media seems only focused on the fact that this is an advantage for Harper. He has the most money. Can you talk about this kind of gerrymandering of the electoral times and what your opinion is on spending limits in the electoral process?
Well, definitely the Conservatives have more. I don't think they have quite so much more as lots of reports have said. The Conservatives have raised a lot more money in the last 4 years since the 2011 election, but they've also spent a lot more. And if you look at the amount of money they have coming out of 2014, first of all, they spent most of what they raised in 2014, and they do have an advantage, but it's just not quite as big an advantage, I think. It's probably about a $14 million advantage over the Liberals, whereas some people are saying it's like a $40 million advantage. They're just not taking into account how much the Conservatives have spent in the past 4 years, including on a lot of attack ads that cost a lot of money to run on TV and elsewhere. But at the same time, because they do have more money, they'll have that advantage. And really there should be, I think, a limit on how long an election campaign can go, because Harper's called this election in early August with no intention really of spending a lot of money during August, but with the intention of spending the entire $52 million they're allowed to spend probably in the last 3 to 4 weeks of the campaign. So that shouldn't be allowed. You shouldn't be able to double the spending limit and then essentially spend the whole amount in the last 4 weeks. And the best way to do that is just put a limit on how long a campaign can be.
We're talking about election spending right now, but technically, you're calling for the Conservative government to stop spending taxpayers' money on electoral advertising, which they've been doing over the last 2 years. Could you speak to that?
Yes. I mean, they've actually spent a ton of money over the last several years, a lot of the advertising that they've spent money on has been very questionable, you know, by a lot of people, not people who favor the opposition parties, but just more independent people, questioning really whether some of that advertising is just to promote the Conservative Party as opposed to actually inform voters in a useful way about government programs and new laws and things like that. You know, the total amount since 2006 is an estimated $750 million in advertising. It's more than any government has ever spent. Most recently, they approved $13 million of advertising just in the last few months leading up to the election. And it was pretty clearly partisan advertising. Only one province in Canada has a system for stopping this. It's in Ontario. The Auditor General in Ontario has the power to say, no, you can't run that ad. It's too partisan. It's too much in favor of the ruling party. And to order it to be changed or stopped. Unfortunately, the Ontario Liberals recently, in their most recent budget, weakened the power of the Auditor General to stop partisan advertising by the government. Not surprisingly, since the Liberals are in government. The Liberals actually brought it in, though, the previous premier. brought that system in, and it's the only province, again, that has that check. We need that check not only at the federal level, but we need it across the country. It's just so easy for the ruling party to abuse government advertising in ways that help the ruling party, and it just, you have to have an independent body that can stop it, like the Auditor General.
Now, I think we're all sick of seeing those Canadian action plan, you know, Canadian jobs action plan by the Conservatives, which actually didn't produce a single job.
Some of them were straight up dishonest, and some of them were stopped. You can stop a dishonest ad by complaining to the Canadian Advertising Council. They unfortunately don't make public rulings, but essentially some dishonest ads that essentially claimed that something that had not been passed by Parliament was already in place were stopped, and those were part of the Conservatives' spending of the public's money on these ads over the past 5 years.
The NDP and Liberals have both indicated they're in form of a better voting system. Currently, the first-past-the-post system, we have almost 40% of Canadians that don't vote. Can you talk about what you would propose as a better voting system, and would Canadians have to go to a national referendum to change the system, as Harper recently stated?
Well, first of all, to give credit where credit's due, also the Green Party is in favor of voting system reform. The Liberals favor a system called the ranked ballot. That's essentially where you would not just vote for the person you want to win, but you'd also essentially rank everyone on the ballot and indicate your second choice, third choice, fourth choice. And then those are all combined, and if no one wins a majority of first place votes the first time around, then the candidates that receive the least number of votes, their votes, the second, third, and fourth choices are essentially distributed to all the rest of the candidates until someone comes out with a plurality, the most votes. And it's a system that a variation of it was considered in a referendum in British Columbia a couple of times, actually. And first time, actually, won, and it should have been put in place, but unfortunately the Liberals in BC said, no, you can't just put this change through if a majority of voters vote for it. Two-thirds of voters have to vote for it, and only 58% did. So instead of 66%, only 58% did. So it wasn't put in place in BC, even though a majority wanted it. So that it's a variation on that system. The NDP and the Greens want a system called proportional representation, essentially meaning if you get 10% of the vote, you get 10% of the seats in the House of Commons. Essentially, what Democracy Watch's position is a mix of those two, to ensure that every person elected has a tie to a riding and to voters that vote them in, and also a safeguard to ensure a small party that might receive 2% of the vote doesn't have undue power in terms of being able to force a larger party that needs them to govern with a majority, force them to do things that are not in the public interest. So there's a lot of systems out there, and that's what makes it a difficult problem to solve. Almost all the other systems are better than the current system we have. But what you have is a split amongst voters as to the alternative system that they support. And until that split's solved, we likely won't see the change. Should we have a referendum to make that change? I don't think we need to. There are consultation processes that are just as meaningful, respectful, and democratic as referenda. And if we went through a meaningful democratic consultation process with the public, and there was a consensus around a new system, then I think the ruling party at the time should just enact that system. Again, because it would end up being an improvement over what we have now, no matter really what system you put in place.
Now, Harper recently stated that if any political party wanted to change the voting system, it would have to go to a national referendum. Is that the case?
You don't have to, no. I mean, we've changed lots of very fundamental things about Canada just by passing a law through Parliament, often with very little consultation with the public. For example, the Trans-Pacific Trade Treaty that's going through right now, the TPP as it's known, there has been no public consultation on that. Parliament hasn't had a debate on it even. And under our Constitution, the cabinet, the prime minister and cabinet ministers, can just sign that deal. It doesn't even have to be approved by parliament. And that will fundamentally change Canadians' economy if the rumors about what's in that deal are true. So for Prime Minister Harper to say this one decision of the voting system has to go to a referendum is just being hypocritical, because there's many, many other similarly fundamental decisions that are made in far less democratic ways. We don't need a referendum for everything. Again, if we have a meaningful consultation, and there are lots of ways of doing that, then that's enough. We have elected politicians, and together with a meaningful consultation and those politicians approving the change, I think is a democratic process enough.
Now, you've touched on something that I want to expand on, the TPP agreement. Most Canadians probably don't even know what that is or have any idea what could be in that agreement. What are your concerns about such agreements, and how would those agreements affect, say, Canadian democracy and our ability to choose for ourselves?
There is a great difficulty with international treaties of any sort, trade agreements or anything. It's really hard to do a public consultation while a negotiation's going on and the trade-offs are being done between leaders of governments in various countries. But it can certainly be done better than what the Harper Conservatives have done and what Canadian governments have done in the past with the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA as it's known, and others. And that is, if you know the agreement is going to be started in terms of negotiations, then you do the consultation before the negotiations start, and you establish what the public wants, and then you go to the table with that position. And no government has done that at the federal level in Canada. And as I mentioned, the Prime Minister and the Cabinet can sign these agreements. They don't even have to have the approval of Parliament. The only approval that's needed in Parliament is if an agreement requires us to change a Canadian law, then obviously Parliament has to approve that change. So we're in a really interesting situation right now. It's, I think, unprecedented. Prime Minister Harper has a majority. The TPP is being negotiated. He or his cabinet ministers may sign it on behalf of Canada. They may then lose the election. The TPP would require Parliament to change Canadian laws. The new Parliament may refuse to change those laws in the way the TPP requires, and effectively just renege on the agreement and void the signature of the Conservatives. And really what should happen is that the Conservatives should have consulted so that they would have a mandate to sign something, and they didn't. They have no mandate to sign anything. And as a result, I think that they're really going to face a lot of criticism if they go ahead and sign this thing during the middle of an election campaign, for good reason.
And unfortunately, when a government comes in power, you've just touched on a few things that they can kind of shield the public from embarrassing things about their agenda. And this government, like no other, has muzzled scientists, bureaucrats, and others. What do you feel would be the best system to put in place where we could actually get the right information and get past the government that's trying to shield critical public information that we need to be informed and to make the right choices?
Well, what we have now is something called the Access to Information Act. But if it was a truthful name for that act, it would be called the Guide to Keeping Information Secret That the Public Has a Right to Know Act. Because that's really what it is. There are so many loopholes in that act that can be abused because the enforcement system is very weak. We have an information commissioner who can only point out that she thinks a loophole has been exploited in a wrong way, but she then has to go to court to try and force the document to come out. She can't even order it, the release of the document herself. In British Columbia, Ontario, a couple of other provinces, the information commissioner can order the release of a document. There are loopholes across the country in all the Access to Information Acts, or some of them are known as Freedom of Information Acts. The loopholes are pretty similar, so we need these changes across the country. And what we need is a change to what is really an open government law with very, very few restrictions on disclosure. There's only a couple of areas that you really need restrictions. One is you can't have police having to disclose what they're doing in their investigations of crimes, because if then they would essentially be tipping off the criminals. You can't have people's personal information disclosed, because then all sorts of companies would want information that we are required to give to the government that violates our privacy if it was disclosed. But not much else. And it's really, you know, just governments maintain this lie that they can't govern fully publicly, that it would be too difficult to make decisions. And it isn't. It's difficult to make decisions that the public doesn't want in the open. And that's why governments really want this secrecy, so that they can shove their agenda halfway down Canadians' throats before we even know what's happening. And so we need a true open government law, and there's a way to do it. The Federal Information Commissioner has released a report a few months ago with 85 recommendations for changes, and she pretty much nailed it in terms of what needs to be done. And if the changes were made, we would have a true open government law.
The government shields us from us getting information, but when they want information, they certainly know how to get it. They passed Bill C-51. Do you have an opinion about Bill C-51 or any advice to Canadians wanting to protect their civil liberties?
Well, Bill C-51 has been roundly criticized by people across the political spectrum, not just based on speculation and saying, oh, I really don't think this is a good idea, but that it clearly violates our Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And I expect the courts will strike down the measures in Bill C-51 that violate the Charter. Charter challenge has already been launched by the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. Unfortunately, we'll be in a transition period before the Supreme Court of Canada rules on this, which will take a few years, where I think you will see lots of abuse by the spy agencies, CSIS, the RCMP, using these new powers that the Act gives them. Unless we have a change in government, because both the Liberals and the NDP have said they would repeal the entire bill. The Liberals have said they would repeal and delete the sections that have been criticized across the board as going too far and violating charter rights. So the election result, as with the TPP, is important in this in terms of what will happen with Bill C-51. But it's another example of systemic changes that we need. We need a requirement to consult with the public in a meaningful way for any significant decision. There was no consultation on Bill C-51 before it was introduced. We need an honesty in politics law. The Conservatives simply lied and lied and lied again about what was in Bill C-51 and the effects of it, even in the face of criticism from the Canadian Bar Association, which is a very fairly conservative association of thousands of lawyers across the country. They just continue to maintain the same lines, which were lies, and they've done that in other instances. And that should just be illegal. We need an honesty in politics law where you would face a high personal fine if you lied to the public. And you would be fined again if you lied again. That's the number one thing that voters want, and unfortunately no party is promising that in this election. Hopefully one will by the end of it, because it's a fundamental change we need to clean up our politics and ensure that decisions are made that are actually in the public interest.
Now, I know how I feel about this current government, but your organization and the research you've done, how would you grade the different parties on their openness, their accountability, access to information, and ethics? How would you grade them?
Well, we don't actually do a grade of all the parties in between elections. And there are problems with all the parties, though. Just to give you one example, there's a rule in the ethics code that members of parliament wrote for themselves back in 2004. First of all, Canada became a country in 1867. It took members of parliament 147 years until 2004 to write ethics rules for themselves. So, you know, that shows a problem across the board. When they finally wrote that code, there's a rule that says they can't accept any gift except, you know, hospitality. Like if they speak at an event, they could accept a plaque or the meal that's offered at the event, but nothing else. Right after that rule is a rule that says, however, they can accept the gift from anyone of travel paid for themselves, their family members, and their associates anywhere in the world as much as they want, anytime, as many times as they want during any year, which is a loophole from this gift rule. And it's just ludicrous because lobbyists are the ones who are sending politicians on junkets, often with their spouses or family members. And they always claim they're going to learn something at a conference, and then they go off on some trip on the side. And no party has spoken up about that. They all maintain this. So that's just one example that they're all really there to serve themselves in part. And the fact that we don't have an honesty in politics law shows the consensus among politicians that they don't want the accountability for lying to the public. So these are real systemic problems that run across this political spectrum. In terms of platforms, we've had various parties get the best grade in our report cards on their democratic reform platforms in past elections. The Green Party at times, the NDP, the Liberals and Conservatives have never had the best grade. Or sorry, the Conservatives did in 2006, but then they violated half of their promises right after that, their democratic reform promises. And they've gone on to do lots of dishonest, unethical, secretive, unrepresentative, and wasteful things, that, all of which they promised not to do. So we'll see with this election.
And many people would like to find out more information about this. Can you give us the contact information for Democracy Watch so people can become more informed about these issues?
Yes, it's democracywatch.ca, and you can see we have about 15 campaigns. We have a couple of other initiatives. We're actually going to launch a private prosecution of the Conservative Party officials who booked the fraudulent robocalls during the last election, calls to thousands of voters across the country that misled them about the location of their polling station and where to vote. We have a private prosecution also coming up of the officials in Prime Minister Harper's office who bribed Senator Mike Duffy. And then we have other campaigns, essentially all trying to make Canada the world's leading democracy and ensure everyone in politics is required to be honest, ethical, open, representative, and waste preventing. So again, it's democracywatch.ca, and people can become a Democracy Watcher by signing up there and also contact us by just clicking contact on the website. info@democracywatch.ca is the main email address. And we welcome people who want to help out with research and spreading the word and lots of other initiatives that we have that through the Democracy Watcher Network.
Thank you so much for joining us. I know it's very late where you are. We have a federal election coming up. Any final thoughts to voters before I let you go?
I would say go and vote, but also bring a non-voter with you. And you can check out another initiative that I'm involved with. It's called votepromise.ca. And we're trying to get non-voters active in voting. And the best way to do that is have a voter take a non-voter to the ballot box and with them and help them learn all the ways of and get overcoming all the barriers to voting. And it's really important. We are at very low voter turnout now, only 61% in the last election. And people, when I say vote, I mean go to the ballot box. You don't have to cast a ballot for any of the parties. You can spoil your ballot. You can write a message on it, a little short letter to all the parties. They'll see it because when they count the ballots, there's people there from all the parties looking at all the ballots. And it's just important to turn up, not stay at home. Because if you stay at home, then politicians won't care what you think. They're not concerned about you because you're not doing anything to either help them win their job or threatening them with losing their job. So showing up's important, and that's the best way to reach non-voters is to have voters invite them and find them and invite them and convince them to vote and help them go and vote. So unlike most people who say just go out and vote, I say don't just go out and vote, also take a non-voter with you.
Thank you so much for your time tonight. That's very good advice, and you have a lovely evening, and thank you for the work you do.
Great, thanks for your interest, and happy talk again through the campaign whenever anything catches your eye.
Thanks again. This has been Duff Konica from Democracy Watch, and thanks again for doing this.
Thank you. Take care.
come to the end of our program. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwavesmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources, or to support our efforts by making a safe PayPal contribution. I am Sylvia Richardson. Thanks for listening.